What? What? Yeah, you do. Yeah, you know exactly what I'm talking about. All right, Halsey is locking us in. So if you want out of this bookshop tonight, you better show some goddamn appreciation. Welcome to Hemingway's. Gonna read a quick little thing here. I'm gonna say some shit. Dawn is coming up in San Francisco now, 6:09 a.m. I can hear the rumble of early morning buses under my window at the Seal Rock Inn. Out here at the far end of Geary Street, this is the end of the line for buses and everything else. The western edge of America. From my desk, I can see the dark, jagged hump of Seal Rock looming out of the ocean in the gray morning light. About 200 seals have been barking out there most of the night. Staying in this place with the windows open is like living next to a dog pound. Last night, we had a huge paranoid poodle up here in the room, and the dumb bastard went totally out of control when the seals started barking. Racing around the room like a chicken hearing a pack of wolves outside the window, howling and whining, leaping up on the bed and scattering my book galley pages all over the floor, knocking the phone off the hook, upsetting the gin bottles, trashing my carefully organized stacks of campaign photographs. Off to the right of this typewriter on the floor between the beds, I can see an 8x10 print of Frank Mankiewicz yelling into a telephone at the Democratic Convention in Miami. But that will never be used because the goddamn hound put 5 big claw holes in the middle of Frank's chest. That dog will not enter this room again. He came in with the book editor, who went away about six hours ago with 13 finished chapters, the bloody product of 55 consecutive hours of sleepless, foodless, high-speed editing. But there was no other way to get the thing done. I am not an easy person to work with in terms of deadlines. When I arrived in San Francisco to put this book together, they had a work hole set up for me downtown in the Rolling Stone office. But I have a powerful aversion to working in offices. And when I didn't show up for 3 or 4 days, they decided to do the logical thing, move the offices out here to the Seal Rock Inn. One afternoon, about 3 days ago, they showed up at my door with no warning and loaded about 40 pounds of supplies into the room. 2 cases of Mexican beer, 4 quarts of gin, 12 grapefruits, and enough speed to alter the outcome of 6 Super Bowls. There was also a big Selectric typewriter, 2 reams of paper, a face cord of oak, firewood, and 3 tape recorders, just in case the situation got so desperate that I might finally have to resort to verbal composition. We came to this point sometime around the 33rd hour when I developed an insoluble writer's block and began dictating big chunks of the book straight into the microphone, pacing around the room at the end of an 18-foot cord and saying anything that came into my head. When we reached the end of a tape, the editor would jerk it out of the machine and drop it into the satchel. And every 12 hours or so, a messenger would stop by to pick up the tape satchel and take it downtown to the office, where unknown persons transcribed it onto manuscript paper and sent it straight to the printer in Reno. There is a comfortable consistency in this kind of finish, because that's the way all the rest of the book was written. From December 1971 to January of 73 in airport bars, online coffee shops, and dreary hotel rooms all over the country, there is hardly a paragraph in this jangled saga that wasn't produced in a last-minute, teeth-grinding frenzy. There was never enough time. Every deadline was a crisis. So that's Hunter S. Thompson, Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail. Which is all to say, working with writers is a very difficult thing to do. And our readers tonight, in one way or another, whether as editors, publishers, workshop leaders, advocates, have all worked with writers to promote their work, to see that work across the finish line, to be the conduit that travels from the writer to the reader, because that nowadays that can happen, but most often it doesn't. It requires intermediaries who just believe in the work, who love it, who love the writers, who love the poetry, who love the prose, and just, they just fucking want it in other people's hands so that they can have the feeling that they have when they read it the first time. And tonight, Joan and I really, as I said this last week, last 2 weeks, 2 weeks ago, this was one of the readings we had proposed prior to the pandemic hitting. We really wanted to celebrate writers in town who set aside their own work, their own time, their own lives, to work as advocates for the work of other writers in Pittsburgh and elsewhere. It is an often thankless job. Not always dependent on hellhounds and cocaine, but often, more often than you think. That Margaret will be up here. She'll tell you about ghosts, too, right? What? Oh, you'll know him. But yeah, we really wanted to celebrate the folks who, when you work as an editor, you are, as a writer, and you decide to work as an editor, you are really setting aside your own work, you know, to spend time in another person's world and to make that world a reality for as many readers as you can. And that's a very special thing that is often left, unsung, unpraised. And tonight, we applaud everyone who's going to be at this mic for not only being fantastic writers and great members of our local literary community, but also advocates and editors and people who have done an incredible amount of work in just making literature real for writers like the rest of us, or just readers, even if you don't write on your own. It's a beautiful thing, and I've worked on both sides of that line. I just want to say I appreciate all of you tonight, and I know Joan does as well. So thank you. Thank you for your service. So now that I've invoked Joan's name, Joan will come and say something. It's not like Bloody Mary or anything. You don't have to say it. Beetlejuice. Say it three times. Say it all together. Joan Bauer, Joan Bauer, Joan Bauer. And Joan will arrive. Thank you.